This episode is brought to you by 100 Bogart Street, a co-working building in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Need a professional place to work from? Learn more by visiting 100bogart.com. Hardcore is a new series from Heritage Radio Network. Over six episodes, we're taking a close look at the rebirth of American cider.
Really, it wasn't until about 10 years ago that cider started to be revitalized in the United States.
From the science of fermentation.
So yeast, it's a fungus. It's a unicellular fungus.
To the magic of terroir.
What really excites us is thinking about communicating that very sort of spiritual aspect of knowing a piece of land.
We're setting aside our cider donuts to gain a deeper understanding of this singular beverage.
I love a cider donut. You don't have to have a cider donut with your cider, and I will die on that point.
Subscribe to Hardcore wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from way. It was pretty much on time today.
Yeah.
We were, you know, we're waiting for our theoretical special guest, yes. Phil Bravo! But he's late.
Only Phil.
There's Phil Bravo. He's staring around like he doesn't know what a studio looks like. The man teaches recorder and triangle to children and doesn't know where a sound booth is. Makes no sense. He'll be in here in a minute. Joined as usual with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, getting ready for the Thanksgiving?
We should talk about our sale.
We will. We got Matt back in the booth. How you doing?
I'm great.
Yeah? Yeah, where were you last week? Were you having fun or not having fun?
I was at jury duty. I was having fun.
Ooh, jury duty. So jury duty, they sent me a notice to my wrong address and then said they were going to throw me in jail. But here's the hilarious thing. I just got it. It was like super late. Here's the hilarious thing. They're supposed to get their jury stuff from voter records, right?
Yeah.
Well, my voter records are at my current address, so, you know, one ass doesn't know what the other elbow is doing.
Well, with me, they actually managed to do it the other way. They somehow found me, even though I had not yet updated my voter registration. They found me and sent me a thing. So, you know, sometimes they get it right.
Were you chosen?
I was not chosen. Nothing interesting happened. It was like my own private library. It was a great day. I just worked.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something about... I was on a jury once, but sitting in that waiting room is just, I don't know, man.
I want to be selected for like a very limited run trial. I don't want to be there for weeks, obviously.
But. Yeah. Well, I was once selected for one that they tell you when you go to jury duty that you need to schedule, I forget, X number of weeks, like 2 or 3 weeks. That's basically like the thing. And so then if you can't do that, they're like, well, then don't even come to jury duty. Get it postponed. So I went, and the judge was like, this trial's going to last for 3 weeks. I was like, oh, you said two. You said two. And the third week, I'll be in China. This was years ago.
Oh, wow.
And they were like, get out, you jerk, you jamoke. Butt lord, get out of here. I mean, so I'm paraphrasing slightly.
And then how long did they let you? They promised me I would not get called until 8 years from now. Yeah.
Well, it's a funny thing. I got to look back. The last time I served on a jury that, you know, went to verdict, I was the foreman, in fact, Matt.
Why? You're so important.
It's alphabetical order. And they didn't let us choose. And there was no Amoldsons there that could beat me out on the Arnold. So.
Yeah, you will always be the foreman.
Well, until, you know, Barney Amoldson's there, then I'm host. I tell you, being foreman has its privileges, you know. Anyway, so now we are joined in the studio by Phil Bravo. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How you doing, dude?
Listen to that voice.
Snap! All right, listen. I need you to use that sweet, sweet voice, Phil, to tell people about the Booker and Dax Black Friday holiday sale.
Yes, Phil, go.
Have you heard about the Booker and Dax Black Friday sale? Dave, is it crazy?
It is bananas, Phil!
B-A-N-A-N-A-S, bananas, Dave?
Like, what was it? How does the Grinch say it?
Oh, with a greasy black peel.
With a greasy black
peel. With a greasy black peel.
Yeah, yeah. So you were late, so we made fun of you teaching recorder and triangle to small children.
Yeah, that was what I was very busy doing. I was on the train just giving out recorders to people to brighten up everyone's commute.
He brought out the recorder, and then the two-year-old at the party was just blowing it all over.
The recorder is a terrible
instrument. That came out as you expected.
Family.
Oh, yeah, also we can't curse.
Recorder is possibly the worst instrument of all time.
I mean, exactly, which is why I go around giving it to children. Just, you know, spreading music.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, I got some good news and I got some bad news. It makes a terrible sound, but it can only make one sound at a time. That's the good news.
The thing is,
it's not polyphonous.
The two-year-old was able to make quite a good sound by, like, he had like half of it entirely just swallowed at that moment. And still, you know.
It's like covering some of the holes. Like
exactly.
Yeah.
And so you just like. Just
how do you make noise when the whistle part is covered, whatever that's called there?
You know, life finds a way.
Yeah. Yeah. What's that called in technical jargon, that little whistly cutout in the front? Or at the
I think
mouth
it's whistly
part.
Cutout.
Whistly
mouth
cutout
part.
Mouth part.
Yeah.
You ever made a, do you know that you can take young moosewood saplings, which is a striped maple, in spring, cut them, hit them with the back of your camping knife to free the bark, then push the wood out of the bark, leaving the bark as a straight tube, then cut a notch into it and pull it back and make a slide whistle out of it. It's a thing.
It's a thing.
It's, well, in the Northeast in the 30s and 40s, it was a thing and might have been a thing all the way up into the 50s. But if you are a connoisseur of 1890 to like 1950 American tree and forestry stuff, then
if you just happen to be,
yeah, or you know, if you read all of the works of Harlow, for instance, of which there are probably only like five, so it's easy to get them all. Like there, your multiple instructions on how to build you a slide whistle out of a moosewood sapling.
Doesn't it only do one thing?
No, beep, yeah, yeah. Beep, beep, beep.
Can you play it though?
Like, yeah, it's like a sad trombone. All the time.
Well, it's like a happy on crack trombone.
It is true. And also, do you know that if you have a drill and a parsnip, you can also have your own recorder?
I would like to hear about this. Is this food related?
This is food related.
Finally.
Yeah, finally.
Yeah, so give me some.
I mean, that's pretty much it. You just need a long drill bit. You go right down the middle. You can make your own little whistly bit in the top. If you use the top joint of a recorder, it's cheating a little bit.
That's cheating a lot.
Yeah.
Why parsnip and not like carrot?
Well, I mean,
is a parsnip softer? Do you have to soak it in water first?
Literally, you could do a carrot or a parsnip. I just think the parsnip has
bigger.
A little bit more character.
Yeah. What about the tone?
Exactly. It's a little bit of a woodier tone.
Well, oh.
I said with no data to back that up.
So like it wouldn't work on something that's entirely water without a lot of structure, like not a daikon.
I think a daikon would be like as soft as you'd go. I think even a potato would fall apart pretty quick.
Yeah. Also, like there is more kind of lignified crap on the inside of a carrot. Or a parsnip, which is, let's face it, a non-orange fakey carrot.
It's true.
Yeah. So, I don't know. What's
the difference between a parsnip and a carrot?
I mean, they're different, but, I mean, like, if someone was like...
They're not as sweet, right?
What?
No, they are. Parsnips are much...
Carrots are sweet.
But parsnips are like a roasted parsnip.
I like a roasted parsnip, but I'm saying it's kind of like a bunk carrot.
That's nonsense. This is nonsense.
I mean, I like parsnips a lot. I cook parsnips. You know what this is not related at all, but you know what I like a lot, but I don't like as leftovers?
All of the stock of the amazing Black Friday sale.
Bringing it back, Phil.
No leftovers for you.
Rutabagas.
Rutabagas. All right.
I love rutabagas.
I don't think I could pick a rutabaga out of a lineup.
They're kind of look like waxy Charlie Brown heads. With a little bit of, right? Yeah. Stas, you with me?
Can I get one of them waxy Charlie Brown heads?
Yeah. If you're in the supermarket and you see a waxy Charlie Brown head, odds are that's a rutabaga. If you're an English person, a Swede. For some reason, the English call them
or
Swedes.
A Swede.
They call them Swedes.
They call them a Swede.
Who knows
why?
A Swede. Swede. Yeah, Swede. But they're real waxy on the outside, so you cut off the wax, and they're great steamed. But, like, the next day, I never like them as much. I mean, like, maybe if you mash them and put them in a soup, they're fine the next day. But if you just have, like, let's say you're doing a prep where you, I don't know if you know this, If, you know, for those of you that like only cook at home, but you know, in general, like you'll par cook or fully cook your veg and then reassemble and finish at the fire, right? So like, I don't like par cooked steamed freaking rutabaga the next day.
I mean, who does, Dave?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe many people. Swedes, perhaps.
Perhaps a Swede.
I don't know. But I think that the rutabaga is a I mean, more people should cook with rutabagas. They are delicious. And I like the word.
Brought to you by the Rutabaga Council.
Rutabaga. Okay, say rutabaga with a serious voice.
Listen.
Rutabaga.
Oh, see? Nastas, don't you want to eat that?
Yeah. A waxy Charlie Brownhead.
So what is this in this bag here? We're going. Wait. Let's finish our Black Friday crap.
Okay.
So Nastasia Lopez and I went to China a couple of weeks ago. China. And we had some good word. We visited the factory that makes the Spinzols. And we have a new agent, right, over there. And which the new age is not related. We visited the factory, and Nastasia has never been to China before. So I was there. I was like, listen, just, you know, I'm going to turn this lady loose on you. Nastasia's like, poof, poof, bang, and they were like, okay, we'll lower the prices on future Spinzols. So we were able to bring the price of the Spinzol down based on our future, and assuming, of course, that the tariff gets lifted, which, you know, who knows. But, like, bring the cost of future stuff down so that we're off, able to now offer the Spinzol for the low, low price, Phil.
He doesn't know, I don't think.
I think a... Oh, I did know. Okay. $4.99.
That's right.
Yes.
Was, if we have a YouTube, so Nastasia, we're like, we're going to do a YouTube video about it, about the sale. We also did some infomercials. I haven't cut them together yet.
Yes, but this video was my idea.
What? The whole thing? What? That's crazy. So she, not being from New York, so she has no idea what she's talking about, right? And don't shake your head, Miami man. Like,
I watch enough Seinfeld to know.
So,
right.
Crazy Eddie, you grew up as Crazy Eddie, because we were doing a bunch of Billy Mays style stuff, which we haven't done yet, but this is like, Crazy Eddie was a guy, he went to jail for some kind of a fraud, but he used to put on like the goofy sweater and start screaming that his prices were insane and throwing stuff around. It was like a kind of a local PC Richards.
Which then on Seinfeld became, I'm the Wiz!
The Wiz is an actual thing, too.
The Wiz is also a thing?
The Wiz is a thing.
Yeah. All right, I'm from Florida.
Yeah. Yeah, but the Wiz wasn't...
Discount New York.
The Wiz discount store, also like kind of a local PC Richards, I never went to it, was, didn't have a, it had a like a, an over-the-top kind of voiceover stitch, but not like a face, like not a singular Crazy Edward in the way that Crazy Eddie was a guy. Or in the way that, for instance, Dr. Zizmore was a guy on the New York City subways. For those of you that, you know, I told you, Dr. Zizmore's daughter became a food writer bloggist, at least for a while, and she came to interview us. She said her last name is Zizmore, and we're like, whoa, 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 whoa. What? She's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, the Zizmore? Dr. Z? And she's like, yeah. I was like, oh, yeah. Anyone who was alive during that time period, which lasted up until, like, probably 2014,
Yeah, I was in New York for that.
Yeah. He must have retired or something. I don't know. But the man had impeccable skin. So he, like, he also had all these commercials where like, they'd have these random, and it's, like, only in New York do you get this kind of person. Like, the person who's, like, kind of doesn't want to be on camera is kind of looking around. It's like, thank you, Dr. Zizmore. You know what I mean? Like, my skin was completely messed up. Thank you, Dr. Zizmore. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of a thing. It's, like, a very New York kind of commercial.
Pushed him onto the camera.
Yeah, just pushed him onto the camera. Go, go, go. I'll give you some more. I'll give you a free fruit peel. Anyway, I just came out with that out of my head because I know nothing about dermatology.
This is the second time in a week that Zizmore has come
out. I know. We talked about it last night.
Yeah.
Well, this not on the show. You mean in Nastasia's life.
In Nastasia's life. Sorry.
Well, look, I mean, like...
It's a very specific
You know, there's
place.
There's a... You know, for those of us that ride the subways, those kind of, like, long-term... Like subway ads have become part of your life in a way that I think a non-New Yorker wouldn't kind of understand. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because you're smashed in. It used to be, by the way, it's a lot different now on the subway than it was, let's say, 40 years ago. Like when I was a little kid, I was very, very much instructed, don't look at anyone. Don't look at anyone. stare at the ceiling, stare at the ground. Do not make eye contact with anyone. Now, you know, now that we, you know, live, you know, in the New York of nowadays, I feel that I could just like stare a hole through someone's forehead and odds are they won't do anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but what do I wait for when we take the subway together?
So for those of you that have ridden one of the, so in New York City, most subway stops are about 2 minutes apart. Like, give or take, they're all about 2 minutes, except there are a few long hauls. So one of the long hauls is between 59th and 125th on the blue and the orange lines. But another fairly long haul is the tunnel under the water that the L train takes as it travels from Brooklyn, thankfully, back to Manhattan to take me back home.
Thank you for explaining why I was late.
Yeah. So anyway, so if you happen to go on the L train midday and you're in one of the more center cars, there are groups of people that come on.
It's showtime.
And they say, it's showtime. Yeah. And then if tourists, there are tourists, and then there's also a friend of the show, Paul Adams, who also like obstinately would not move out of the way, just like, He went in like full cow mode where he was just kind of standing there and like not being moved by the guy's like, showtime, showtime, showtime. Paul's pretending like he doesn't know what showtime means. Anyone who has ridden New York City subways knows what, well, who's ridden a lot, knows that the showtime is. They put on crappy beatbox music. There's always at least two, sometimes three people, and one plays the hype man while the other one does their kind of routine, which generally involves some form of pole dancing, parkour kind of a situation. And the worst of all is the hat catching. Please, Showtime people, get rid of the hat catching. Not interesting. Maybe the first person that flipped a baseball cap and caught it on their head, maybe that was cool. But now it's almost as bad as bottle flipping. For those of you that remember the bottle flipping trend of a couple of years ago that I was tortured with by my children. Listen, Nastasia Lopez's only goal in life is to get me kicked in the face by a Showtime person. Now, I have never seen anyone get kicked in the face by a Showtime person, but Nastasia is convinced that they're going to get on one of these poles and spin around, and one of their, like, you know, sneakers is going to hit me square in the face, and she can't wait.
Yeah, this checks
out.
You broke my balls!
She's like, can't
wait
for it.
I just want to know if you're going to get angry or if you're just going to sit there and stew.
Just take it.
Yeah, I'm not sure which one's going to happen.
What's better?
I don't know.
Just stand there, like coldly staring with blood running down my face? Yeah. What's...
Yeah. Well, now you'll be excited because the thing has finally happened.
What thing?
Well, Nastasia will be excited. Oh, yeah. I will be bleeding.
Are you sure you won't look at her and you'll be like, Nastasia, it happened?
Yeah, but the thing is Nastasia makes me, like, every week makes me get on the most crowded, dumbest car. That's nowhere near where I need to go. Another thing that you might not know, is hopefully we'll do some more food now, but the other thing you might not know is that everybody who rides the subway every day knows exactly what car to be in for where they get off, okay? So Nastasia makes me go in not that car, right? Just for the slim hope that, you know what's going to happen one day? And I'm not going to spoil, but anyway. One day she's going to push me into the guy's foot.
Yeah, maybe. No, I wouldn't do it. You'd be so mad, you'd punch me.
Yeah, it's about the anticipation. About
I would not punch you, Nastasia.
If it ever happens, you'd be so sad.
No,
you'd have
she
nothing
would not.
Left to live for.
No, well, she would find something else.
No, I'd find something else. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, so what's in this Whole Foods bag?
So this is from Capri Sun.
Capri Sun, the beverage manufacturing corporation? Okay, oh, yeah. Capri. Yeah.
We have.
I was like, good, because I've made plenty of fun of Capri Sun, the beverage. To my children, but not, I guess not on air. Oh, speaking of making fun, you know who's supposed to be on air today?
That's in 2 weeks.
Aura King Salmon was supposed to be. Now, Aura King Salmon, instead of this random conversation we're having about New York City subways, you could have been hearing about aquaculture,
ikijime,
fish anesthesia, importing fish from New Zealand, the taste of salmon with different slaughtering techniques, and my son Booker's favorite cured salmon at Russ and Daughters, which happens to be New Zealand King Salmon. But what happened was this. It was a bunch of people. This is as Nastasia tells it to me. There's a bunch of New Zealanders. They like were hanging out with an American friend. And they're like, I'm not going to do a New Zealand accent because I don't really know what it is. They're like, tell me about this Thanksgiving thing. And they're like, oh, yeah, no one's doing any work from now until the end of the year. They're like, oh, crap on that. I'm not going on that show then.
No, they'll be here in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, they also said this. They were like, do you want a list of questions for...
No, they wanted a list of questions.
They wanted a list of questions, and Nastasia's like, no.
We don't do that.
You just don't do that.
I mean, if you would like, I can talk at length about salmon slaughtering techniques.
No, you won't. No, I mean, he will not.
I'm sure and I can come up with something.
No, you
is it accurate?
Do not, no, no. Do oh, not yeah. challenge Dave. Radish kimchi.
You are.
Then head spike caught 1121.
Is it frozen?
Cold black sea bass.
Ooh,
and black
tautogs.
Sea bass.
See, black, wait, blackfish or black sea
bass? Black sea bass and black sea bass fillets. And then he made nothing
Thank
fancy.
Thank you, Capri Sun. You have to get a name that is less like a crappy
beverage. Well, he won't give us his real name. homemade nothing fancy carrot cake and pumpkin pie. That's from that new cookbook.
What new cookbook?
Nothing fancy. Please pretend you know what I'm talking about.
That's just mean to me at all times.
Dried lover.
What's a dried lover?
I don't know.
Speaking of dried lover,
I
finally purchased in America. Laver. That's laver. Seaweed. Yeah. Come on. Please pretend like you know what seaweed is.
Dave, read the thing.
Laver.
Oh, here's the.
Ooh, is that a kasugai? Does it have a dumb saying on it? I love a dumb kasugai saying.
This is the character.
It doesn't have it. It just has a mix. Okay, so listen, back to China for a minute. Okay. So Nastasi and I are in China, and we go to... And that's why we lower the price on the Spinzol. The Searzol, get this, people. Now, we're hoping this works.
Well, let's tell them... Yeah, you got to use the phrase, though.
Okay. So people are like, yo. Can you send me a Searzol? And the answer is no, we can't, because Nastasi and I strangely don't own any. And Amazon buys them from us and takes possession of them in China. Now, we're also taking possession of them, a couple of them now, for this Black Friday thing, because here's what we're going to do. So please, if you know someone that's going to buy it, please make our scam work. We're putting a small number, a relatively small number, of Searzol's available, and it's a big freaking thing, believe it or not, because we haven't... I don't even want to get into it, like how nasty Amazon is with... Whatever, I don't want to get into it. But, like, we're putting a block of them in, and we're going to lower our price on, like, our Prime stuff there, and then Amazon will match it. So what we want you to do is buy Amazon's Searzol's that they've already paid us for at... Technically, yeah, they don't pay us for like 5 months if they pay us at all. Well, it's too much to get into. So anyway, if you're gonna buy it, just please click the Amazon one because that'll let us keep the sale going longer.
What are we trying to do to Amazon?
Give them the Schuttengorp, as my stepfather would say. Stassi's like, what's the Schuttengorp? I'm like, you can picture it. Here's the fist, Schuttengorp. You know what I mean? As my stepfather Gerard says, that's another one of the great Gerardisms. Like if. You use the S word, but if crapped himself. You're like if this, if that, if this, if crapped himself. But he said, you know, if pooped his pants, basically. And then once, I've said this on air before, right? So then, and he says it also with should. I was like, you should have done this, you should have done that. Oh, yeah, should crapped himself. But he says, you know, the S word. And so, and then one day I was like, well, it's because, you know, he keeps on saying should have, and he never makes it to the bathroom, and he poops in his pants. And he goes, you're too literal, Dave. That's not what it means. I'm like... That's exactly, what the hell else can it mean? He's like, it's a figure of speech. I'm like, what the hell else can it mean? He's like, it means if, you know, himself. You know what I mean? I'm like.
It's alliterative, Dave.
Yeah. Anyway. Another one is Schuttengorp. You give it to him. You have to, if you're going to give someone the Schuttengorp, people, what you have to do is you have to put your.
We don't know if it's going
to
work.
You have to put your elbow, like you have to lift your arm up to kind of a level position at chest height. With your dominant hand, with your palm flat to the ground and your fingers spread. Then what you do is you bring your elbow down into a gouging kind of uppercut motion, and then you make the fist as soon as the hand gets flipped under as you go down into the, you flip your hand over and you make the fist, snap your fist, and then up into the Schuttengorp.
We don't even know if it's
Dave just
work.
Demonstrated really quality French horn stop technique. That was he started with a lovely web and then moved directly into stopped horn. It was beautiful.
Yeah, nice.
It would perfect
they
for some
do
mala.
That to their horns? They That's do. How they do that?
Yep.
Oh, nice. All right. See, learn something new every day.
So hopefully our plan works.
Also, the cocktail cube, which we've never, we did an infomercial on the cocktail cube. We've never pushed it. We're dropping the price to $9.99. And Searsall, we're going to take down to $59.99, but please buy Amazon.
Yeah, and we have Searsall shirts, but...
We do?
Yeah, but they're at my house.
All right. So, Brandy wrote in last week about what?
He didn't wear a Searsall shirt.
I had it on, it's but radio. I didn't wash it.
He's wearing a Searsall shirt. He's wearing three Searsall shirts. It's like freaking Enmascarada de Plata. El Santo. If I pull off one Searsall shirt, there's another underneath. Exactly. And another underneath. And another underneath. He can never be un-Searsall shirted. Oh, thank you for those of you that ordered sprayed limpet asbestos shirts. Those are shipping and they'll be there by December 3rd.
This episode is brought to you by 100 Bogart, a new building in Bushwick, Brooklyn that provides offices, co-working, event spaces, and a brand new podcast recording room. Have you been dreaming of starting your very own podcast in Brooklyn? You can now rent space in 100 Bogart's custom-built podcast room to record interviews, voiceover, and commentary. The room is fitted out with two microphones, mixing board, and a MacBook Pro running Pro Tools. You can rent the space by the hour, and a rental of an hour or more includes a 100 Bogart co-working pass. That means complimentary coffee, tea, and access to your own desk for the rest of the day. So what are you waiting for? Get started on your next audio project. 100 Bogart has the space and amenities you need to kickstart your podcast. Learn more at 100bogart.com or call their team at 718-362-3539.
I have a question. This is Brandy. I have a question that I can't seem to find any actual information about, and I'm hoping you can help. Occasionally, I make yogurt or farmer's cheese, and as you can imagine, I end up with quite a bit of whey. I've read that you can use whey as a substitute for water in baking, but I can't seem to find any insight into how or why. That's also true. Like, people are like, you could use it. You're like, but why would I use it? I think it has a tenderizing effect, not as much as milk, but more than water. So, like, it's also not adding a bunch of other stuff, so you could probably use in place of water in your quickie breads, and it'll probably give... it'll probably give it, like, some tenderization effect, although I can't vouch for that 100%. If you're using an acid-based whey or one that's been kind of lacto-fermented, then it'll probably kickstart any fermentation into the dough, and it's going to acidify it so slightly. So the more acid the dough is, the slacker the gluten's going to be, so you just got to be careful of that. But if you're doing something like a quick bread, it'll make it more tender because the acidity will weaken the gluten structure in the same way that, like, perhaps a buttermilk would. It'll also make it so that you would have to use less acid if you were going to add a basic, this is the acid way, a basic thing like baking soda to it. Okay. I can't seem to find any insight how or why. Also, I'm wondering about the implication of sweet whey. Well, you said from yogurt or acidic whey from cheese. Well, I think maybe those are kind of reversed, right? So sweet whey would be from rennet, if you're renneting cheese, right? So, like, there's many different ways you can make cheese. If you're using rennet, then there hasn't been a lot of kind of bacterial action or acidic action, but with lemon juice or whatever, on the product. So you've curdled it with an enzyme. That would make a completely sweet whey, i.e. non-acidic. And the coolest application for that is to make traditional ricotta cheese. Now the problem, everyone who makes ricotta cheese now makes it with whole milk. And that's like the standard ricotta cheese that we kind of get is whole milk ricotta, that we make is whole milk ricotta. But you can take just whey, as long as it hasn't already been acidified. People still typically add a little bit of milk back to it to kind of increase the creaminess and probably the yield. And then you heat it up to almost boiling, to like 195 Fahrenheit. And then as it's cooling, you add acid and you get the ricotta, you skim it off. But you're only going to get like 2 cups out of a gallon of whey. And I don't know if you can freeze the whey in batches and then thaw. I don't know if you can freeze the whey in batches and then thaw it and make the ricotta. But if you could, that would be kind of a, you save it for a while in zippies and then you make a batch of it when it's done. But it won't, I don't think, work on whey that's already been acidified either through kind of lacto cultures or through the straight use of lemon juice or other acids in the curdling process. Another thing, a lot of people seem to use it as a kickstarter for lacto-fermentation, but again, I have no experience. As usual, I have no experience. All right, Carlos wrote in, we don't have anything. Oh, you know what we didn't talk about before? About China. So Nastasia, we get it. We're on the plane. Yeah. And so Nastasia shows up at the airport, and she's like, nah, Ted went on last night. I don't feel good. I'm like, fine. That's fine. Right?
Not what I said.
You said I'm hungover. So, like, we're in the airport, and Nastasia is, even though we're about to get on a plane with, the food was terrible, but even though we're getting on a plane, Nastasia is hoovering in.
French onion soup.
At an airport. Okay, what could be more horrific? Anyway, so she's hoovering in this thing, and I'm like, what the hell are you doing? I'm about to get, she's like, I'm hungover. I'm fine. So we get on the airplane, and then we're on the airplane, and she's sitting behind me, which is a ruddy nightmare. Never sit in front of Nastasia, because she's like pushing on the back of the chair. It's a touch screen, not a punch screen, Nastasia. So she's pushing it into the thing of the whole flight. And then, like, halfway through this 15 and a half hour flight, she starts tapping my head, and I'm about to turn around. I'm about to call the flight attendant on her and be like, there's a woman behind me who's lost her mind. She's like, I'm sick. Yeah. I'm sick. I was like, oh, Jesus, Nastasia.
And I know my body, and I was sick. Right. I don't get the flu, but I got the flu.
So she's like, I'm sick. So I'm like, oh, my God, because I just have these images, because we're not only going to Hong Kong, we're going directly to China that night. And for those of you that ever flown or traveled into Hong Kong or China, you have to go by these people with head detectors where they're taking thermal images of everyone as they go through. And
as soon as you get off the plane.
And if you have a fever, well, I don't know what happens, but you don't pass through and you don't have a ticket to go back. So, like, I don't know. They just put you as Booker used to say, they just crumple you up and throw you in the garbage, pretty much.
So I told Dave this on the plane, and his reaction was, are you effing kidding me? And then you got up, went into your backpack,
yeah.
And threw some Tylenol at me.
I was like, take all of these Tylenol and get your fever down so that we can get into the dang country. So then the entire time, Nastasia was not her usual chipper self, but she was still game to go out, but she stayed sick almost the entire trip.
Yeah.
So, like, from the culinary stand highlight, so we spent most of our time in Shenzhen. And Shenzhen, for those of you that don't know, is a town that 40 years ago was a tiny fishing village. And then as soon as the UK-Hong Kong handoff happened, China built up Shenzhen into this mega, like trading city and manufacturing hub. So it's all only 40 years old. So there are very few locals. What that means is that because everyone's come in, they have actually, even though it's not really, like, it's not an authentic city in the fact that it didn't grow like a city does. It has some good food in it because people from all over China have, like, lived there. So, you know, because Nastasia was sick, I was walking around doing a lot of, you know, street food kind of a situation. And the hotel we stayed in was pretty close to the street food.
I stayed in the room for an hour, Dave.
Lies. So anyway, well, we'll get to it. So, Phil, you had a Jianbing before?
I did not.
The Chinese crepe?
No.
I had maybe the best one that I've had on the streets of Shenzhen, because it's typically a street food. And so for those of you that don't know, you take, don't make crinkling noises, please. I just heard you over my earphones making a crinkling noise. Why would you? This is like, you're like the Shaggy. My children and Shaggy. I didn't do that. It's like, I'm watching you. I'm hearing you and watching you. Anyway, so this lady was using a crepe maker, which looked a lot like the French crepe makers, and a raclette, which is the French kind of crepe maker doodad. So she takes this mixture of mung bean and regular flour. I think mung bean's a good word. What do you think, Phil? Can you say it?
Mung bean.
Oh, that's nice. Nastasia was like, before I didn't want mung beans, but now I do. Yeah. Now I do. So she takes this kind of thin crepe batter, raplets it out real thin. And at first I was like, yo, your crepe game is weak, because it didn't spread as well as like a traditional French crepe. Because a French crepe, when it goes out onto the crepe maker, is a thing of beauty. Like the swirl, you've seen it, right, Nastasia? When they swirl that crepe on, a good crepe maker, there's no tears, there's no holes, there's no double swipe. They're just like, they ladle it in and whoop, and around it goes, and there you go, crepe.
What is it that they do, Dan?
Okay. Yeah, anyway, so it's like, you know, there it is. So This lady, though, I completely misjudged her skills. Her skills were soup dupe on point. So she does the, it takes her like two swipe arounds to get the mung bean crepe all the way out. Then, instead, here's the fun part for those who never had one. Here's the fun part of the whole kind of McGillicuddy is, but I've only seen people do it with kind of pre-beaten egg mixtures. She takes the egg out and goes, crack, cracks the whole egg onto the top of the crepe, onto the raw side of the crepe, right, after it sets a little bit. Then she wipes just the white around the entire crepe, leaving the yolk intact, takes the raclette, breaks the yolk, wipes the yolk as a separate layer over the top of the entire thing, then goes chackety, chackety, chackety with sesame seeds over it, flips the crepe, then puts on the sauce and the crumpled up crunchy cracker. And the crumpled up crunchy cracker, cilantro, lettuce, and some sort of mayonnaise-y sour cream, whatever, mayonnaise-y thing on top of that, and folds it all in. But it's the combination of the crunchy on the inside of the soft that makes it the big money move. It's the big money move. She's like, do you want fillings? I was like, no, I want it just like that. Later I'll get the fillings. But there was no later. But anyway, there was no later. Then we had it again at the hotel, and the hotel guy was trying to be all game about it. But I was like, you're going to be better when you become a 70-year-old woman. And you're doing this on the street every day,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
It was fine. But so that's the one that really has me thinking the most about stuff that I could do because I own a crepe maker. I now have 3 sacks of mung bean flour in my house. But I'll let you know if I do anything with it. But then when Nastassja and I get back to Hong Kong, and
after
by the way,
a hellish ride.
Oh yeah, it was terrible. It was terrible. Like China just shut the border down. They're like, only Shenzhen people can get through now, because we were in Dongguan that day, which is outside of Shenzhen. They're like, crap on Dongguan people. And so the guy's like, okay, crap on me. Turns off the car, and we just sit there like we're dead for an hour and a half.
On the side of the road.
On the side of the road. Like jerks. Until they're like, okay, non-Shenzhen people can go again. And then we went through the border, and we made it in real late. We went to our hotel. Hong Kong people, because of with the protests, is dead. Like, we were at a bunch of bars, and, like, the F&B is down, like, 50%. Hotels are, like, at, like very low occupancy. Like, you know, they're at least 50% below where they normally are. But the thing is, I feel bad about it because as a tourist, you know, even a business tourist like us, did you feel unsafe at all?
No.
I didn't feel unsafe at all. I mean, the only thing is that... you know, you might not be able to go to a particular neighborhood. And like once or twice, there have been protests at the airport. So some flights were canceled. But I was not ever in any danger. So like, you know, I feel like I'm not going to get into it. But I feel like in the media, like this kind of like the violence has been overblown. And so people are afraid to go. So someone wrote an article where they're like, this is so ridiculous because, you know, there's this whole, it's a big thing over there. But they're like, I went to Hong Kong Disneyland and there was no one at the rides. Like, that's what you got out of it? Like, this island's in turmoil and what you get out of it is I get to go to Space Mountain without a wait? I was like, you know, yeah, way to feel for people, brother. You know what I mean? Like, but I you know, I will say that don't be worried about traveling to Hong Kong and go, if you're there, go to restaurants and go to hotels. So Nastassja, we're about to go to the night market but the night market was going to close in what?
25 minutes.
No, like an hour, but we were a half hour away.
Yeah.
And Nastassja's like, I don't feel well. I don't want to go. So I was like, well, there's a 3 Michelin star restaurant in the lobby of our hotel. It's the only 3 Michelin star Cantonese restaurant. So Nastassja's like,
let's do it.
You're like, I'm wearing a hoodie. I'm like, who cares? So like we show up and because of the fact that everything's down, there was only like two people in the entire restaurant. So we did the whole tasting. And I'm here to say that even when it's 3 Michelin stars, the people who do the full on Cantonese food don't like salt.
Mm-hmm.
It was the least salt. And it takes me, people, I've said this before on the air, it takes me at least a week to get used to the low salt level if I'm eating like mainly Cantonese stuff. You know what I mean? Stuff that if you served me in the United States, I would just drench in soy so that I could get some salt into it. But like, what do you think about the salt level stuff?
It was not that. It was, yeah.
It was good, but
it was low. Low salt.
You wish there was more salt, right?
Yes.
Because you're a salty individual.
And then we went to a bar singing bar.
Oh my God.
And we paid for drinks for the band because our credit cards started working again.
Yeah, so we were in China and we don't have control over our own credit card.
Mah. Don't get into it, dude.
So they shut down our credit card. So like I had some like old renminbi. So we're like going off of like whatever I had in my wallet, like trying to like scrape around and, you know, make do. And they turned our credit card on the last night.
Yeah.
So we go to this bar and there's...
Who is they, like, by the way? Like they turned our credit card on.
The bank.
Just the bank.
Well, yes, we won't get into it. So yeah, we bought a round for the band, which feels terrific. If you're in a bar, right, and there is a band playing, right?
Like a small bar.
Yeah. You know, and it's not like, you know, it wasn't $15 cocktails or $30. It was like, you know, we bought them. We're like, around for the bar. They're appreciative. Much more appreciative than those other jackweeds that were sitting two tables over that just kept screaming requests that they didn't know. You know what I mean?
No, it's a class move.
Yeah,
it's
right? Class move. As a musician, you can appreciate this.
You want some drinks. It's a long night.
Yeah, it's a long night.
It makes you feel appreciated.
Yeah. And the other thing is that, like, if you're the kind of musician who won't have anything to drink during your set, you can always postpone it until the set's over. You know what I mean? You could tell the bartender, I'll have mine after the set.
Not one of those guys waited.
Yeah.
No, they didn't.
Not one of those people waited. Not even the drummer.
Yeah, no.
Every drummer thinks they can drum when they're drunk. They can't. Very few people.
John Bonham.
I mean, okay. Very few people are John Bonham. In fact, John Bonham's not John Bonham anymore.
That's correct.
Because
it's getting dark.
Because he's dead. Yeah. Carlos writes in, I'm looking to extend the shelf life of cookies and brownies for up to 90 days. So far, I found that the water activity, or big A, little W, for those of you that are into searching for symbols in the internets, is a significant factor. That's true. I've heard claims that invert sugars help with this. How does this work? So it's remember, Phil, the things, because there's a whole litany of things that I have to kind of go back and address, right?
This takes me off.
What?
Nothing.
She's taking a break. I'm focusing now, Dave.
Yeah. Now she's taking a break?
Yeah.
What kind of terrible thing are you drinking?
Oh, it's from anger class.
Nastasia goes to a class about anger. I feel that she doesn't need this.
It's like screamy yoga, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but lots of...
But you don't have to bend yourself into pretzel shapes, right? So someone commented on our Black Friday video, which, by the way, go on the Instagram or Twitter or YouTubes and look for the Black Friday video and see it. Nastasia, as per normal, doesn't say anything, but she is paying attention.
Yeah, because Rebecca was going to get hit in the head.
Everyone's like, first of all, I throw a spinzol, and everyone's like, what happened to the spinzol? I was like, I embedded it in Rebecca's head, so it's fine.
I really wanted to see the, like, off-camera video of just Rebecca catching stuff.
So I have it. There's footage. The issue was this. Like, we shot it in what used to be my apartment. It's now my sister-in-law and brother-in-law's apartment. But Rebecca didn't step far enough onto camera to be... So she's obscure. Like, she also had this complicated headgear on, this reindeer headgear, and a very highly patterned dress. So rotoscoping is the technique of going in frame by frame and like making a mat so that I can drop the mat out if you can't key someone out with a color key. And it was impossible. It was very hard to rotoscope her out. So if any of you guys are like rotoscope experts, we can get Rebecca back into this commercial.
Or we can just show them the original video.
But it doesn't work because it's too busy. There's too much other stuff going on. And only Nastasia, who cares more about the inside joke than selling anything.
It is funnier with Rebecca in it. You don't like the magnets on the fridge in the background.
It's not magnets. There's like a Batman logo. There's like... It's a bunch of things, a sink. It's like there's no place to write over because it's like super busy, and there's no way to make her, and she only just half of her like face creeps in on the edge, in and out.
But it's so awesome.
Okay, well, you know, maybe we'll do a B-roll where you can put it on your stories of what it looks like her throwing the things, but you know, the unedited version. It's a crazy person.
So we've got brownie shelf life.
Oh, wait, how do we get into this? Oh, she was paying attention. Well, how do we get into that? How do we get back on the video?
Paying attention.
Paying attention.
You said I was paying attention in the video.
No. Correct.
Okay. pH is another important factor, though with baked goods, I'm not sure how I would adjust the pH and still make the product taste good because you'd have to make it acidic. Also, as far as additives go, most seem to be or reported to have carcinogenic properties, mostly recorded by a-holes, though. So, like, you know, I mean, you have to say which preservatives you mean exactly. Some things are real problems and some things are overblown. I just listened to the UR episode where you spoke about potassium. Yeah. Sorbate's a good word. Say it.
Sorbate.
Oh, my God. Phil needs to move back to New York and just, like...
Say sorbate over and over again?
Yeah, Matt, you gotta...
If only I could monetize
this. You gotta, like, hire Phil to do your, like, Heritage Radio Network voiceovers. He could do them from the studio in California. Like, say this week on Meetin' 3.
This week on Meetin' 3.
What do you think?
Hired. Super hired.
Yeah, right? It's like, how many of you have seen Daddy's Home with Mark Wahlberg and
I think
Will
you
Ferrell?
Were literally the only person in the theater for the entire run of the show.
First of all, everyone has seen that. Yeah.
The movies he likes are...
I took my son Dax, who wanted to go see it, but Mark Wahlberg... you know, I'm not going to spoil anything, but Mark Wahlberg...
Don't worry, we're not...
Mark Wahlberg comes in.
Say hi to your mother for me.
And, well, that's kind of what it was like. Yeah. It's like Mark Wahlberg's the ex and comes in, and he's just cooler than Will Ferrell and better looking, cooler. Will Ferrell works at a radio show, and Mark Wahlberg comes in and out of nowhere gives the most amazing, like, what's the little jingle thing called for a radio show? Like that little, you know, like, Weeby 108, like that. Like, what's
the
that?
Call sign?
Okay, yeah. He just gives, like, the best one ever, like, super... And Will Ferrell's like, I hate this. And then all of a sudden, just from playing that, the residuals on that, he made more money than Will Ferrell made, like, for his entire career. Anyway, great stuff. You could be that man, Phil Bravo.
We can only hope.
Yeah. Okay. The cookies and brownies are for we're still talking about this question.
Oh, yeah.
The cookies and brownies are for cannabis edibles, and I hope to help people with serious illnesses, and therefore I want to stay as natural as possible while maintaining the best quality I can. Any little bit of help will be much appreciated. Carlos, now listen. Listen. Carlos, the main thing you have to worry about, and this is what everyone confuses these things. In fact, I have people confusing this almost weekly. To the extent that people talk to me, they confuse this. When you talk about shelf life... or how long something lasts, there are two separate problems. Two separate problems. One is safety, and the other is quality, right? So a lot of people mistake the difference between kind of those two things. Now, and there's also various failure mechanisms that can happen, some of which address quality and some of which address safety, right? So here are the four problems that you're going to have with a cookie and or a brownie. Now, a cookie is going to last a lot longer than a brownie because it is typically lower in moisture, right? But you're going to have these problems. One, molds and other kind of yeasts. And that's what your thing like your potassium sorbate is going to be for. And the difference between those two things, potassium sorbate is just a sorbic acid salt, right? So it's kind of purified and it's a salt of that. Easier to use, easier to buy. Frankly, the same crap, right? So that's what you're going to use to inhibit things like a mold. But bear in mind, you're not going to get mold on a product if there's not a lot of moisture in it. So if most of the softness of your product is coming from fat, let's say butter, right, and very little of it is coming from water from egg, then you're going to get very little mold. In fact, when was the last time you saw like a super dense fudgy brownie mold? You don't really see it that often. You'd see it on breads, but typically on high moisture breads. That's why you won't see a lower moisture bread mold on you. But a little bit of sorbate will probably help kill down on that mold. Another problem you're going to have is rancidity. So a lot of what goes wrong in a cookie or a brownie, especially something that's based on butter, right? The thing about shortbread, which has a lot of butter in it, like is allowed to go, is a long-term product. It has almost zero moisture. It's just kind of flour held together with butter. And that tends to protect against rancidity. And plus the flavor of a shortbread is okay when the butter is changed a little bit. But a lot of the off flavors you're going to get in baked goods over a long period of time is going to be rancidity. So to stop rancidity, if your people are paying a lot of money, which they will for a cannabis edibles, put some oxygen scavenging packaging in, or think of even doing a modified atmosphere packaging where you pump like an inert atmosphere into the package so that, you know, and if the water activity is low enough, obviously bacteria aren't going to grow, such that you're inhibiting rancidity. Another thing is moisture migration. So in a cookie, things go stale. And things either go stale or they go too wet one way or the other, depending on kind of what the moisture balance is between the crust and the inside. So for that is choosing something that has a relatively uniform moisture content throughout. It's going to make it easy to keep the moisture content the same. And packaging it in an airtight fashion so there's no moisture migration in or out is going to make your life easier. The higher the fat content, obviously, the lower the staling will be because there's kind of less structure there going on. Or if it's a cookie that has very little water in it, there's also going to be very little starch retrogradation because, in fact, the starch is hardly ever functionalized at all. And so that's not going to go stale as long as the moisture doesn't kind of leak in and out of it. So that's definitely a moisture management problem. Ooh, it's not recognizing my... So you have your staling, your moisture management, your rancidity, and your mold. Those are your main kind of issues, and I think they're all fairly easy to deal with packaging requirements and just making sure that you don't have a lot of kind of residual moisture left in. Is that an okay answer? Yes. I had something else relating to packaging cookies and brownies. Nastassi and I once had to vacuum down a whole boatload of cookies that we had made for the troops. That was a damn nightmare. But the cookies lasted forever because they were vacuum packed. Remember that, Stas?
Yeah, Dave. Yeah? We talk about that on the Christmas episode.
Yeah. I had a good packaging idea. Anyway, Sean Lewis wrote in, "Hi, Nastassia. I submitted a question. I'm coming back into the cocktail world and would love to see if Dave is giving classes. I theoretically am giving classes, but... in other words, I'm still on the FCI's website, but I am not...
You're not teaching classes.
I want to teach classes, and Greg Bohm wants me to teach classes on the...
Who?
Greg Bohm, partner at...
I thought you were going to say what you call it.
Anyway, all right, and there's another whey question I will get to in 1 second. Here. I mixed up a batch of Milk Wash Clarified Punch and bottled it last week. It was a variation on Philadelphia Fish House Punch with peach, pear, and fall spices. Fall spices. What do you think about fall spices?
I love fall spices.
Yeah? Does that basically mean pumpkin pie spice?
I think so. It's pumpkin pie spice, but it's also the, you know, it's like the, what's the thing that you boil in the house and you make it all like, ooh.
What?
Century.
Huh? Cloves? You
know, yeah, that yeah. stuff.
I simmered the syrup with ginger. Oh, it was very tasty. It went well, but I made one big mistake. I simmered the syrup with ginger. I noticed that ginger syrup was cloudy, as I expected it to be, but I wrongly guessed it would clear up with the milk washing. Nah, man, starch. It's very hard to trap on to starch. Starch is a pain. You can wait a long time to settle it out, or you can use a very, very sharp knife to cut your ginger and then not stir it or beat it up, and then it won't throw off as much cloud. I mixed the milk punch ingredients, added them to the milk, and let the whole mix sit for 2 hours, stirring occasionally to let the casein curds mop everything up. That's good practice. Then I spun it out in a spins all for about two hours. That's a long time, man. 2 hours, long time. Long time. Too long. Too long. You're going to evaporate too much of your product. Like 10 minutes. 10 minutes. Then spun it out in the spins all for about 2 hours and drew some test glasses to check for particles. I couldn't see even the teensiest speck of pulp, and yet the drink was still cloudy, probably the starch. I ran the centrifuge liquid through a Chemex filter and Shewan ran it, and it ran through quick and clean as water, but it was still cloudy. Next day, I made another ginger syrup, let it cool, treat it with Pectinex, and let it sit. Pectinex won't kill the starch. When I came back, I was dismayed to see no break at all. Yeah, cloudy. Yeah, starch. Those are all my available clarifying techniques at home. I don't have any wine-finding agents. So my question is this. Wine-finding agents won't work on starch. Is there something about ginger syrup that cannot be clarified or just muck it up? A related milk punch question. Is milk punch shelf-stable because the casein curds attract and bind to the enzymes that produce bitter limonin? That's an interesting question. I've made a cordial that was pretty limonin protected because it was heated. I don't know if milk, I don't think the milk's going to pull all of it out, but the only way to see is to see whether it goes. Stability is another thing. Clear milk punch will go cloudy after a week or so because the whey proteins will settle out and you can respin it. Here's what you ought to do. Do your initial spin, put the sucker into bottles, tall bottles, tall things. Let it sit. Do you remember Epic, the song Epic from was it Faith No More? Anytime someone says "Let it sit," what is it? Let it sit. What is it? Mike Patton? Anyone? Mr. Bungle? Sure anyone?
I mean, Mr. Bungle, absolutely. But
yeah, okay.
The
you don't
most
know
famous Mr. Bungle song.
Well, no, but it wasn't. That was Faith No More. So
Mike
Patton was in Mr. Bungle. Went into Faith No More. Faith No More was like, people actually like this. We could make a lot of money. And he's like, no, I'm going back to Mr. Bungle. So he went back to Mr. Bungle, and Faith No More kind of fell through the cracks. Anyway, you let it sit for a long time, the starch will settle out. And it'll settle out a lot harder and stronger than it will if you haven't spun out the majority of the solids first. Then pour that, I'm talking like a week, don't touch it. Then like, don't touch it. Don't move the container, make sure the container is round. Then gently pour all of the clear stuff off in the top. Then you'll have a small amount at the bottom that you can try to respin or just let it go, but you'll get a pretty high yield of very clear stuff. It's just going to take you a week. That's what I would recommend doing. So for Thanksgiving, I am going to do my thing where I cut the backbone out of the bird, rip the main bones out, leave most of the bones, take a stuffing plug. I'm going to cook the stuffing plug in the oven so it's nice and hot. Then I'm gonna wrap the bird into some sort of like crazy thing. I'm gonna shove the stumps of the inside of the legs against a hot pan for a while to start the cooking on the inside there. And then I'm gonna maybe air dry the skin. Then I'm gonna drape the turkey over the hot stuffing plug, put it back into the freaking oven, and then cook it from both sides. Cooking my bird from both sides now. And then it's gonna come in and we're gonna have my turkey. That's how I'm doing my turkey. No one called in any questions, but I do have
a question, Dave.
What is it?
No.
Five minutes.
What
minutes.
Is it?
We gotta go.
I'm gonna be very quick.
Okay.
Was it the pulque? Mexico City. We were doing fine.
Right.
Felt great the entire time.
Right.
Watched out
in
the water. Pulque is a kind of like milky tequila adjacent, but it's like a milky beverage that is from fermented, I guess it's like the frass that's left over after you like squeeze out the
no, it's separate. They have a different agave that they tap and then they take the stuff out of it.
So was it this is the question, with water content,
yeah.
Was it the pulque? I was doing fine.
Yeah.
Pulque last day.
Yeah.
It was a terrible week, Dave. It was a terrible week after that.
Like mentally or butt-wise?
I mean, butt-wise.
Yeah, well, so agave has a lot of inulin in it. And so, by the way, for those of you that don't know, Phil Bravo was the person that Nastasia Lopez sun-choked in the butt.
Oh, that is also true, yeah.
Yeah, where she gave him a bunch of raw sliced sun-choke and was like, enjoy this delicious salad. And I would bet, I don't know, I've never had the pleasure of having a lot of pulque, but I would bet it's the inulin. I would bet that there's some sort of residual inulin in the pulque that is messing with the butt. Yeah, because the thing about inulin.
So the answer is it was the pulque.
Probably. Like there's, I don't know. I've never had pulque. I didn't know you were going to ask this. I could have looked
tasty.
I could have looked up residual inulin content in pulque if I had known, but the issue is that the main carbohydrate in that is used to ferment agave beverages is inulin. Inulin is a fructose polysaccharide, like a fructose polymer. So it's broken down to fructose, but your body can't break down inulin. But you know who can? The bacteria in your gut. And so
he doesn't take probiotics.
It doesn't matter. There's no assuming you have bacteria in your gut, your bacteria can turn that inulin into like gas. And I think if you eat enough of it, you probably get accustomed to it. And like maybe you develop gut bacteria that don't produce gas when they're digesting inulin. But for most of us, it makes for a nasty farty, a painful fart too. Like
we ended this on a high note. You're welcome, Dave.
No, he's still going.
All right. So listen.
But wait, we have
two things. Always. So normally, I'm gonna end with the classics in the field, but today we're gonna end with I'm not gonna talk about it. And when classics in the field is done, Nastasia and I are allowed exactly once per year. Phil Bravo will sing the Grinch song for us, and so he's gonna. It's his version of piping us in and out. He's gonna do the Grinch song, And now that Thurl Ravencroft, the original singer, people think Boris Karloff sang the original Grinch. Did not. Boris Karloff was the voice of the Grinch. But the singing voice of the Grinch was Thurl Ravencroft, which, is there a better name ever, Phil, than Thurl Ravencroft?
There is not.
Right. So Thurl Ravencroft was, that's baritone, right? Is there something below baritone?
Bass baritone.
Bass baritone, yeah. So Phil Bravo does an amazing Thurl Ravencroft Grinch, which he will pipe us out with in a minute. And so I'm going to do classics in the field, and then we're going to do Phil. So I'm going to wish you a happy Thanksgiving now. And are we back next Tuesday, Saz?
Yeah.
Are we back next Tuesday? So write us in with your Thanksgiving nightmares, how you burnt your turkey, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, ready? Classics in the Field, yeah! All right, so today's Classics in the Field is not a cooking book, but there is information in it that is cooking related. So for those of you that have hung around me for any length of time, and Nastasia hates talking about this, I believe that every human being should learn to tie a bunch of knots. I believe that it's just a skill you should have. I think you should have a knife with you almost all the time, because what if you should need to cut something like a box? And I think you should have a bunch of knots, and knots are the kinds of things you need to kind of practice. Now, if you're going to get a modern knot book, go get one of Joffrey Budworth or Pawson's books on knots. They're great. They're very good, but there's only one book of knots that everyone can agree is like the Ur reference, like the magic maestro reference of knots. It came out in 1944. It's the Ashley Book of Knots, and it was put out by a guy named Clifford Warren Ashley. He was born in New Bedford, by the way, a whaling town. You been to New Bedford?
I have not.
You have not?
I've not been to New Bedford.
So that means you haven't gone to the Whaling Museum?
I have not gone to the Whaling Museum yet.
So Nastasia, have you been to the Whaling Museum?
Yep.
Did you love it?
Yep.
It's also like the Herman Melville town. She hasn't actually been. She's just saying that to get me off her back. Have you That's actually correct. Been?
I've been to a whaling museum in Sag Harbor, but not the one in New Bedford.
You got to go to the New Bedford Whaling Museum. The amazing thing about the New Bedford Whaling Museum is that in the 70s when I went, it was still pro whaling. And now it's very anti-whaling, but it's still kind of amazing. And there's like little dribblings of Herman Melville all around the town. Great place. So anyway, Clifford Ashley was there. He was an artist, but he went around collecting knots. And he wrote the most amazing knot book that you're ever going to see, called Ashley Book of Knots. I don't think it's available on the web because it's still in print all of these years later. He wrote it, published it in 1944, and had a stroke in 1945. So it was his last work. He didn't even get a chance to change it. But he kind of pioneered the art of drawing knots and how to make them. But the cool thing about it is for the better part of 40 years, he traveled the earth looking for knots in all places. So he has a section, and a lot of it is nautical, as he says, although the sailor may be responsible for 9/10 of all recorded knots, he can hardly claim, it's early times, so it's, they use he, you know, it's 1944, claim to be the originator of the first knot, for primitive people learned to hunt and fish before they ever took to water. The last part is still gendered. I degendered it because I can't stand to read it in fully gendered form. But he has this section on occupational knots. And it's amazing because he just goes through a bunch of occupations. For instance, knots for the archer, the artilleryman, the artist, the angler, the automobilist, which I guess there was still a word in the 40s for the automobilist, the baker. The pretzel knot is too widely known to require much description, but there are several varieties, and often nowadays the pretzels are stamped out by machinery instead of being tied, which is a shame, even in the 40s. My God, the stamped pretzel is an abomination. Pretzels are twisted. People, pretzels are twisted. A stamped pretzel is a sad pretzel. It's not a pretzel at all. It's a garbage. It's a cookie. It's garbage. It's a biscuit. Ugh. The giant pretzel knot is from Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. It is about 10 inches long. It goes on and on for this. The basket maker, the bell ringer, the boot maker, the burglar. I would do nothing to encourage the activities of this arch enemy of society, but I will urge them to consider the awful sequence of the following knots with all its direful implications. So he talks about what knots burglars can use. But then we go to the butcher. The butcher's knots are required in tying up boned and rolled roasts and in preparing corned beef and salt pork for pickling. After passing the end of twine around the meat with a simple noose of some sort is made, et cetera, et cetera. But then goes through listing that he has gone to every butcher shop that he can find in the Washington, D.C. area where he's living at the time and rates every single butcher's knot that you can find. And he's like, he'll say things like, I don't know, it's like there's a lot, so I don't know if I can make it through it. But then he goes through making fun of people who use granny knots. He's like, that knot, maybe that knot would work for a fresh roast, but it's not going to work for a corned beef knot. You can't re-pull up the string in this one. So if you want a very long-winded, like, three-page small-type exegesis into different kinds of knots, and what he very, very kindly puts an Ashley star, next to the butcher knot of choice that he chooses, which I can maybe put on my Instagram later. He goes through and tells you which knot he believes you should use. But no one has gone through every occupation looking for the knots the way that Ashley has. And if you are ever serious about being a human being, I recommend getting the Ashley Book of Knots and at least looking up the knots that fit your occupation, if nothing else. Learn to tie at least 15 good knots. Get yourself a good hitch. Get yourself a good bend, which is how you tie two things together. Get yourself a good stopper knot at the very minimum. Get yourself a good loop knot, people. Alpine butterfly, good one. Anyway, fast to tie. Just read it, enjoy it, and if you can't afford to buy it because it's still expensive, get something from Des Pawson or Geoffrey Budworth. Anyway, that has been Classics in the Field. Happy Thanksgiving, and now we have Phil Bravo doing the Grinch.
Do I have any backup or no?
No.
What do you mean?
There's I need some.
It's not, no.
I need an intro.
How does the intro go?
I don't know. It's like a big band. Like, potato-do-dee-do, potato-do-dee-do-dee-do.
Potato-do-dee-dee,
you're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. I think you did your, what is it?
The Schuttengorp.
Schuttengorp.
But it wasn't an angry one. I didn't make the fist. I just did the, I did this.
Okay, it's true. But we can close on You're a Bad Banana with a greasy black peel.
Woo! Nice. You're strong, welcome. Strong. The Grinch. Happy Thanksgiving. Cooking issues. Issues is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.